And welcome.
Welcome into Gravel Talk, ladies and gents. Thank you for joining us.
Well, this week in the Spotlight and Squared Circle, we are sitting down with
Greg Gagne, the son of Vern Gagne.
We're sitting down with Larry the Axe Henning.
We're sitting down in the Spotlight and Squared Circle with Ryan Allen, Darren Corbin,
Zach Gowen.
We're sitting down with Dick Justice.
You're listening to Gravel Talk, keeping you up to date on the Midwestern independent wrestling.
And we are live!
Hey, guys, big time Grep Talk here. I'm Jesse Von Arun, of course, joined by A.C. Riley and Nick Ragner.
Yeah, hey, what's
up, guys? This is actually one of those shoot shows that might be a work show, but we can't really tell anyone which way it's going to go because that's all part of the magic.
I get what you're saying.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, now you're preluding what we're going to talk about here in just a couple of minutes. But before we talk about that stuff, Jesse, the one thing that we have to make sure that we mention, guys, upcoming shows this weekend. We got ACW on Friday. That's where all three of us are going to be.
Yep.
AC Riley going to be at WPW on Saturday.
Be a fun time.
That's if he actually survives his big match at ACW.
I honestly am not sure that you're going to survive that. Although I am happy this dude's been lugging around a sledgehammer in our house for the past, like, I don't even know. It feels like forever.
And it's been a couple weeks now.
A couple weeks, dude. It's been like a couple of months, it feels like. You must have bought that thing when you first started working for ACW, hoping that you would get booked to use it eventually. But I am excited for you to finally use that.
So how much did Sledgehammer actually put you back? Because I was thinking about buying one at one point.
Actually, I was surprised. I honestly thought it was going to be like $50. It was only like $20.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Wow. It's a nice-looking sledgehammer.
And even then, you can get like the little like handheld sledgehammers, the four-pound ones, for like even like $10.
Are those just like regular hammers?
It sounds like
a regular hammer at that point.
Yeah. Well, I've gotten used like little.
Are they called a mallet? Or are they a mallet?
Mallet.
It's kind of more. It's not really a mallet because like a mallet has like the wider range of the actual like hit.
Hit surface.
Yeah, the hit surface is a little bit bigger.
Its diameter is
but like
this.
Bigger circumference.
I've used basically the difference is just the weight because the one that I have it's 8 pounds and then the handheld ones are 4 pounds. So it's the same effect of a sledgehammer. It's just more in a one-handed scenario.
So you're just carrying it around just for the gimmick purpose at the house?
Or it's
all
funny.
The time. He's just walking around with it. It's weird.
Funny story about that.
Our
toilet broke. The back.
Well, because you use a sledgehammer.
No, no, no.
Right?
Like, well, don't get ahead of me here.
There was sledge coming out of his back end. If that's what you're getting at, that broke our toilet.
So basically, the back of the pipes, like one of the plastic tubes, actually like cut off, and it was one of those things where our landlord was just like, you know, I talked to my brother even said just get a new one. So she came in with the new toilet. We obviously had to get rid of the old toilet, and she asked me, it's like, oh, do you have like a hammer or anything? And it's like, I got a sledgehammer in my car.
Did you say it like this? I got a sledgehammer. Like Peter Gabriel?
I did not say that.
Missed that opportunity.
Or
but
did
no,
you,
I
like pull it out like Triple H does.
No, I didn't do that. But it was funny because when I told her that I told her I had the sledgehammer.
Did you put your hand on one of the ends when you hit the?
No, I didn't do that. Well, it was great just because like I went to go get the sledgehammer. I come back and immediately my landlord was just like, all right, I gotta ask. Why do you have a sledgehammer? And, like, why do you just what reason do you have a sledgehammer for? And I was just like, because I wrestle. I was like, see, I figured that was exactly the reason. I just don't want to assume because, like, she knew that, like, you know, Nick and I both work at, like, at News 8. Mm-hmm. So she's like, I was trying to think of why you would need a sledgehammer at a news station. I was like, well, how else does shit get done? You gotta,
it's like pro wrestler.
You got to bring the hammer down.
She knew it.
So you spit water in her face and gave her the pedigree.
Didn't do that.
No, didn't do that.
But did you use a sledgehammer on the toilet?
Yeah, I got to... Got to take the sledgehammer to break down the toilet, and that was actually a lot of fun.
So what happened with the toilet after you broke it down?
Threw it in the garbage. And then
So you can actually throw a toilet
in the garbage?
I don't think you can do that. That's actually illegal, maybe.
You can. That's why you have to break it down, though. You have to break it down. Yes.
Like recyclables garbage?
Yeah. Basically,
so you can recycle porcelain.
Yeah. You have to essentially break down the toilet so it's like in a trash bag, and then you can throw it away. But you can't just throw just a toilet on its own. Just
sounds dangerous.
Yeah. But I mean, as long as they can throw in the dumpster, that's all that they that. That's
so where
all
does
they
it
care
where
about.
Does it go after the dumpster?
It just goes to the dump.
Well, you said it. You said it goes. Did you put it in the recyclable bin? Because then it doesn't go to the dump if you put it in the recyclable bin.
Yeah, then it goes to
we put it in the refuse bin.
Yeah, so then it goes to the recycling plant. I don't even know, is that a thing?
Recycling plant? Yeah, it's a thing.
Yeah, see, that's where it goes.
So that's where it goes. But then we use the top of it for a promo. So that was fun.
Oh, wow.
I did see that. Yeah, Aaron busted that.
Yeah, it was fun.
Mm-hmm. Like, he busted it, like, right behind where I drive my car. So, yeah, I do have a pop tire, and you are, by the way, paying me for that.
That's really weird.
You know, if you have to actually.
That's really dangerous because I've seen you drive around quite a bit. Like, you were in your parking spot at work, and
actually,
that's 2 miles.
I did see you drive the other day, too.
Did you really see me?
I had to drove by.
Did you see me or did you hear me?
No, I saw you. You and Zari were like on that side street. You're about to cross over by Perkins, and I was driving straight. And I'm like, oh, hey, there's Nick and those guys. And then you,
oh, because
then
we were
you
actually...
passed me. And then you passed me. And here's Brady. He's like, oh, no, this goofy.
Did really?
Yeah.
Was that like yesterday?
I might have been.
Maybe day before. I was probably
like
getting food.
The day before. Day before.
Yeah.
Probably.
No. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was getting,
yeah.
I was
like
getting
a Tuesday.
Food. Yeah. I was getting food.
Okay.
Oh,
that makes sense. Yeah.
I'm usually really aware of all the cars driving by me, but and usually I always see Explorer, right?
It's an Escape.
Escape.
It's
whatever.
Like an Explorer,
but every time I see an Escape, I'm like, is that Jesse? And it's never you. So maybe I saw the Escape and I was like, that can't be him.
That's what I'm kind of thinking. You know.
Whatever, I guess that happens. Anyways, we kind of been talking about breaking toilets for a while now. We're gonna talk about
wrestling.
What we do here. We're gonna talk about some wrestling, which you know, some CWC action. We're gonna just highlight that real quick. It seemed like in those matches this week they used everything, including the toilet seat.
Nice.
You want to see that?
Instead of saying
the kitchen sink thing, I did the toilet seat part. This week we had some awesome matches. TJ Perkins and Johnny Gargano were starting with the main event of the evening for CWC. What an awesome match this was. TJ Perkins coming out on top, the Johnny Manziel of football, even though Gargano's known as Johnny Wrestling. TJ Perkins,
so
man,
he's
this
Johnny,
kid looks...
He's a Johnny Manziel of football?
Yeah. TJ Perkins is. He's got that swag, man. I don't know how to describe
it. You meant to say he was a Johnny Manziel of wrestling.
Yeah, he's a Johnny Manziel of wrestling and
but
football.
Johnny
we
Manziel
know that Johnny Manziel isn't the Johnny Manziel
of Johnny
football.
Manziel is the Johnny Manziel of drugs.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, you're technically the Johnny Manziel of football. I'm sure you could probably at least put a game together without, you know, blacking out by drinking too much.
It depends on the day.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. But AC Riley, I know that you enjoyed the Gargano-Perkins match quite a bit.
Yeah, definitely. It was it told a really good story just because it was that continuity of takeover where Gargano had to tap out due to the knee bar. He was obviously still selling the knee. It was really cool to see that despite the knee injury, you know, going into the match, he was still going to give 110%. And, you know, it was one of those things where you got to see a guy like TJ Perkins, who, you know, obviously a fan favorite, just – in the entire tournament, I know that you were excited, you know, just like, holy shit, they put TJ Perkins over.
Yep.
But it was one of those things because, you know, Gargano could have gone further in the tournament and nobody would have, you know, been upset about it. But at the same time, I feel like the fact that they're putting TJ Perkins to the Elite Eight is all the even better.
The great part about it is that you're not going to kill Gargano's credibility because that dude is one of the hottest guys in NXT right now.
Yeah.
Moving on along, we're talking about Gulak and Sabre Jr. Now, this
why don't we just go with whoever is going to face TJ Perkins?
Because
next?
Now we're trying.
That makes more sense.
We're trying to work our way around so we can
around the horn.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it would make sense. Like, you know, like, let's talk about who we like TJ Perkins.
Because I want to talk about this match,
fine,
but if you want to go to this match, we
that's okay.
No, we're going to go to that match.
Or
now.
You want
to
do Rich, that?
No,
that just makes more sense, right, Alex?
Don't you say anything. Don't you say anything. Son of a gun.
Yeah.
So we have Rich Swann going one-on-one with Lince Dorado. This match also just the great part about what CWC did this week, and we'll kind of preview all the matches when I talk about this really quick, but you had Dorado and Swann kicking things off in that I almost want to call it like an American luchador style, which nowadays it kind of comes off like that fast,
I mean,
quick pace.
It pretty because you have a Swann from the United States and you have Dorado from Puerto Rico.
Yeah, but there was just so many moving parts. I mean, these guys... Mm-hmm. You know, like, if you listen to, like, the Ross podcast or the Austin podcast, like, these guys were really doing the whole, like, choreography. It just felt like a very, you know, very,
very
smooth-flowing,
like a good athletic exhibition.
Exactly is what they called it, and that's exactly what this match felt like. Super impressed, obviously. Rich Swann is super over, and he has awesome theme music.
Definitely. I was telling you.
Singing that today.
Yeah, I was telling you that. It was stuck in my head the entire day at work.
And then when we look at Sabre Jr. and Drew Gulak, I mean... Oh, by the way, Rich Swann obviously going over in that other match. Uh-huh. And then Sabre Jr. and Gulak, man, what, you know, as a guy that just loves technical wrestling, that's all that this was, a technical masterpiece with some swagger mixed in from Gulak. And, you know, even Sabre Jr. showed a little bit of that that anger and really that fight. And, man, this match, this honestly might have been my favorite match of the entire tournament so far.
Yeah, this,
I'd say a lot.
Yeah, this is definitely one of my favorites as well, just because of the fact that like we were talking about with Gulak's match in round one, is that anytime he had an opportunity to reverse something, he took it, and it wasn't like he was waiting for the moment to reverse an Irish whip. He was, you know, even if the guy was on the offensive, even if he didn't like had the opportunity to reverse a move, he was still trying to, you know, grab a hold or grab a hold of something that he could, you know, take the offensive, essentially. So that was cool to see, just, you know, somebody doing that in that style where even on the defensive, he's still doing stuff opposed to just taking move after move. And then on top of that, you know, obviously Sabre Jr. being listed as this technical wizard, so it was kind of cool to see the guy that's getting all the pomp and circumstance for it, but then at the same time, like, Gulak comes in and he has his chip on his shoulders, like, I'm technical too. Why are you getting all the hype?
Yeah, and that's the great part about it. All three of these matches telling great stories. You know, I've been watching podcasts, you know, keeping an eye on the social media.
Watching podcasts.
Yeah, you can watch podcasts. Yeah, okay. You can do that. You know,
are you also listening to silent movies?
I'm not doing that. Okay. So,
they got good soundtracks.
Pretty popular and what a lot of people are saying nowadays, and it's hilarious, but you'll see Raw, SmackDown, C Show, NXT, B Show, CWC, A Show.
Uh-huh.
And you hate to be part of the ICW or IWC Internet. Yeah, got it. Yeah, yes.
Right, yep.
Agreeing with that, but I mean, when you watch stuff like this, just the quality of the broadcast, having Mauro and Daniel Bryan calling the match, showing so much emotion, you know, not overdoing it, being able to sound, I mean, I know this is pre-recorded, but man, if they're going in the booth and recording afterwards, yeah, do more of that, please, because Mauro sounds like a freaking wrestling encyclopedia on these broadcasts. It's fantastic. But just looking ahead, I mean, it's another example where a lot of these guys, as we said before, are fighting for a roster spot. They're fighting to be noticed. I mean, you see a guy like Johnny Gargano doing a front flip off of the apron and, like, slamming into the ring bell. I mean, this guy is putting his body on the line. This is something you're not going to see on WWE live television because, you know, those guys, as we transition over to what The Miz said in this, you know, huge promo that he had, you know, those guys are trying to be a little bit safer because they have these careers to uphold. But a lot of these guys in the CWC, they're out there to make a name for himself, and that's why I think it's so exciting and something that you're not seeing on NXT or WWE.
Yeah, definitely. Looking at the Elite Eight, you're going to see some very tremendous matchups coming up here in the next 2 weeks. And, of course, the finals are coming up, I believe it's, what, September 17th?
14th.
14th and somewhere around there. It's
September,
like,
13th. Yeah.
September 10th.
Yep.
Yeah, there's only a few of those. So it's going to be interesting to see how it really kind of plays out. One of the matches I'm looking forward to, of course, is Kota Ibushi taking on Brian Kendrick.
Oh, yeah, of course.
That's going to be really good. Tozawa and Grand Metallic. That's going to be very good. Zack Sabre Jr. and Noam Dar. These two guys are no strangers to each other. That's going to be a fantastic match. And, of course, TJ Perkins and Rich Swann.
I'm going to point it out right now, and just because he's been getting so much pub lately and he's been showing up at events, I'm liking Noam Dar to go all the way on that side of the bracket just because he's been...
Man, that's tough. That's tough.
Because
Sabre Jr. was your guy.
Sabre Jr. was my guy, but after kind of seeing the impact that Dar's had with WWE and seeing what he's been doing lately and how much his name's popped up, you know, just strictly looking at it, I mean, as from a performance standpoint, I'd like to see Sabre Jr. go all the way, and I'm not going to lie, I would love me some TJ Perkins in the finals against Sabre Jr. But I'm liking Noam Dar from that end, and then on the other end, I'm liking Ibushi. I think Kendrick has the best story there, but I think Kendrick will also make an impact on WWE once their cruiserweight division gets underway. I would actually believe he'd be their first champ.
Oh, is it my turn? No.
Were you just falling asleep?
No.
I'm not even talking about football. What the heck?
Yeah.
I got to look at this thing here quick.
Well, I mean, we got some time to talk football then.
Oh, yeah.
So you got a big draft on Friday.
I got a big draft on Friday during ACW. My life sucks because of it.
Yeah.
It's a $75 buy-in league.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, it's very expensive.
What pick number do you got?
I'm number 7, which also kind of, it's weird.
You can probably get Le'Veon Bell.
See, that's the thing, though, but he's suspended for the first couple of games.
So what? He's suspended for 3 games.
So what do you want me to do? You want me just to throw away my first 3 games of the season? Throw a table over. It's either him or here's my 2 options.
Okay.
Right? You got Le'Veon. AP is fell to me. Do I go AP? Gronk's there. Do I solidify the tight end position with a top player there? I had him last year. He helped me get real successful, but I don't know. Or AJ Green's there too. They just lost Sanu and Marvin Jones,
He's
top wideouts.
He's going to be very target heavy.
Tyler Eifert might be out. He might...
Yeah, I heard about Eifert being out. I mean, what is it, Boyd? And actually, he's picking up some of the steam there.
But he's a rookie, so we never know.
Yeah, well, AJ Green was a rookie at one point in time, too.
Oh, you got me there.
Yeah, all right.
Are you ready to go?
Yeah, I think so. so, I don't know. Like, looking at this a lot, I mean, there's so many different combinations that, you know, you couldn't go wrong with. I mean, obviously, I'm sure the odds-on final match you're going to get is Sabre Jr. versus Ibushi because it just seems like those guys are getting shot up to the moon, so it almost seems like those are the odds on finalists. At the same time, you know, Rich Swann being in the finals with really Sabre or Tozawa would be fantastic. I think for me, my odds on pick would for an awesome match to see would be Kendrick and Sabre Jr.
Like, that's what you'd like to see.
What I'd like to see is Kendrick and Sabre Jr. And the reason I say that is because Sabre Jr. has been nothing short of amazing, so it'd be great to, you know, see him get into the finals because of all the technicality that he's really thrown to the CWC. And on top of that, you have him facing off against a guy like Brian Kendrick, who, you know, is the veteran, so he has all the technical skills just from, you know, being in the craft for so long. And, you know, he's obviously overcome the last
his story,
two.
It's amazing.
Yeah, his story's amazing, and the story he tells in the ring every time, you know, even if he's the underdog, essentially, in the matchup, and just like, there's no way he's going to go into this next one. Case in point, his match with Tony Nese, and then all of a sudden he just managed to, you know, find that weak point and exploit that, and then he manages to get the win. So I think it would be interesting, because obviously Sabre Jr. and Gulak was amazing because it was two technical wizards going toe-to-toe. So it would be interesting to see a guy who's very technical from a young standpoint and a guy who's very technical from a veteran standpoint. And that would be what the match I'd love to see.
Who are you liking, Jess?
Oh, man. I remember when we first previewed the brackets, we said, watch out for the lower right-hand corner. And it's, so far, it's really kind of really stealed the show. I think T.J. Perkins goes over Swan. I could really see him in Ibushi. Kendrick is a good story coming out of that top bracket, but it's just, it's freaking Kota Ibushi, guys.
Yep.
Like, he has been on fire since he's got there, and if I was them, I would try to solidify this guy as a member of your roster, even if it's just, you know, special attractions. He comes in here and there, because honestly, that might be the future of just certain divisions, having special attraction guys, but we'll talk about that later. Evan, looking on the other side, man, as much as I like Tozawa, I don't think he gets past Grand Metallic.
Really?
I really don't. I think it's a good clash of styles there. But at the same time, though, you're looking at what might really fit going against Sabre Jr. and Noam Dar.
Yeah.
Like, Noam Dar is coming in definitely very cocky. He knows Sabre Jr. very well there. I like your pick of actually having him advance, but at the same time, though, they really put in a lot of stock in Sabre Jr. Both of these guys are probably going to end up on the roster at some point. So, I mean, it's only a matter of time. Whoever really comes out of that one, it's going to be a good match. And whatever we get for the finals, I definitely think is going to be a worthy of the first ever Cruiserweight Classic champion.
Agree 100%. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to what they do moving forward. We can maybe talk about that in a sec. I know we got a lot of WWE to get to, and we also have our spotlight to get to. But since we've been talking so much, I'm going to take a quick break, guys. So you're listening to Grapple Talk. Stick around for more WWE talk in just a moment.
This is the monster of the Midwest, Sadist. There's a couple of things I really, really like. I like to hurt people, and I like Grapple Talk. So I'm going to keep listening.
I'm going on tour, and I'm going to show anybody out there that thinks for 1 second that maybe I'm second-guessing myself, that I am the greatest of all time, forever and ever. One surprise. One surprise. I'm back.
To make it out the ice cold streets of the city, you better have a Christopher Word game with it. You better have a dance game similar to Diddy, or play b-ball above a rim like Smitty. Josh, Chris, Bosh, Paul, Gasol, or any other nigga that ball and tall. I used to sell it white as Paul Wall. Gave my young boy 3 of them in the mall, and he gon' bring me 75K back tomorrow. You know what big about, you know what bigger do. Ice water in my veins, heart pumping igloo. I'm familiar with the money, so who the fuck is you? What the fuck you do? Where the fuck you from? Who you knowing? Somebody get this nigga, I don't know him. And I'm about to jet off on his ass like a Boeing. Going, 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 gone. So,
you don't like the prestige that I have in life? You don't like the notoriety? You need just the fact that I got more cars than most of you have friends. I got a big house on the big side of town. I got life pretty much the way I want it.
To make it out the ice cold streets of the city, your mind state gotta be as wicked as fitted. Can't love life, suck a little mama's titty, cause life is a bitch and a bitch ain't with it. You gotta have faith, living life on Biggie. I'm ready to die for the money, who is with me? Life after death, this must be hell. I asked for six figures, cause God gave back. Self, I'm on my way to heaven in a Porsche 911. Buried in my car and I'm surrounded by a harem. Surrounded by my brethren, my funeral is legend. Buried like a pharaoh with my jewelry in the desert. The government, they hate me like Jesus, but fuck them. I did it for the grind, I did it for the hustle. I did it for the people on the bottom in the struggle. I did it for my comrades, did it cause I love them. Custom made, brother. Woo. And I mean custom made. From the alligators to the all I can see you right here, Ric Flair. There's only one. And I don't care if it's Tokyo, Japan, Greensboro, Richmond, Charlotte, North Carolina, Asheville, Atlanta, Georgia, Charlotte, LA. I'm the man that's making it possible. To make it out the ice cold streets of the city, you gotta politic your situations like Clinton. If you chase power, you ain't gotta chase women. So take some advice, take cash over ass. When you get money, you ain't gotta take shit. So long as you broke, she ain't gotta take dick. Capiche? Now you know what motivates your beast. Capiche? Pay the mortgage or the pussy up for lease. Capiche? Church ladies going gaga for the Gucci. Yeah. Got two Nicki's Minaj for some Louis. Yeah. I'm with the keys, get acquainted with Alicia. And every other girl named Rihanna wanna meet ya. They in it for the money, got the swag of the features. Pretty parasites might suck you like leeches. Just some information for a student from a teacher. Real life shit, I'm Mike Bigger, nice to meet ya. Gone. At Delta, the girls call me Cool. At Eastern, the girls call me Slick Rick. And all the other women around the world just say, oh, there goes the man.
Woo! Hey, everybody. It's me, Darren Corbin.
I've always gotten the question, why do I not do my own podcast? Well, I've branched out and I've tried to do Wrestling Reflections and the Wrestlers Reviewing Movie Letter, plus my promos that I flood your feed with all the time. And the number one reason is, when it comes to podcasts, everyone can always find a way to hear myself talk, and there's numerous podcasts out there, but I want to give my endorsement to one very special one. And that'd be Grapple Talk, that covers a lot of the Midwest independent wrestling highlights. See, a lot of the local Midwest wrestlers are the spotlight of the Squared Circle hosts. And that would be Nick Ragnar, Jesse Von Rudin, and AC Riley. And every week on iTunes or Podbean, you can catch their podcast. So I just want to give them a shout out. So if you're asking me why I don't do podcasts and you're maybe looking for my opinion, check them out for all your podcast needs and take a look and keep supporting independent wrestling in the Midwest.
Hey, what's up, everyone? This is Chris Lockman, host of the Smart Money Wrestling Podcast. Join me and my co-host, AJ Jensen, each week as we discuss all things professional wrestling. WWE, NXT, Ring of Honor, Lucha Underground, New Japan, as well as the local indie scene here in Wisconsin. We'll also bring you interviews with some of the Midwest up-and-coming independent stars and where you can see them in your area. You can find us on SoundCloud and iTunes, as well as on Twitter, at Smart Money. Check us out.
Hi, this is the Minnesota Madman, Doug Meyer, host of the wrestling podcast on the DVM Podcast Empire.
One Ball Radio.
We recap Raw, NXT, Ring of Honor, and other shows of the week. We interview wrestlers, go back in time with this week in wrestling history, and we go, hey, whatever happened to you? Check us out on iTunes or DVMPE.com.
For the latest pro wrestling news, keep it locked to www.gerweck.net, Gerwick.net, pro wrestling since 1997.
What's up, guys? This is professional wrestler Rennie D.
And this is Travis Dirty Mester.
We're the hosts of The Pencil, the professional wrestling podcast every Tuesday.
On iTunes, YouTube, Podbean, and Stitcher.
We bring you guests from the WWE, TNA, and all the major independent wrestling promotions around the world.
Follow us on Twitter at Pencil Podcast or on the World Wide Web, PencilPodcast.com.
Hey, this is Raging Nathan Gust. You are listening to Grapple Talk, where they are raging 25-8.
Welcome back to Grapple Talk, guys. We are staying in national news. We talked CWC already, so if you skipped some of the podcasts, which I know I do sometimes when I listen to some of my favorite podcasts, I'll skip through a part. Maybe if there's an interview I want to hear, and you know, I'm not.
You
ever really
always had the problem where like you're listening to one, Evan, you have to stop and you have to try to pick it back up, and you're like, oh, where was I?
Yeah.
Was I around like the hour and 40 minute mark?
Yeah, yeah, I do hate
you're
that
actually
hour
like
and 40 mark. What is it? What podcast are you listening to?
Oh, come on, like the Voices of Wrestling podcast is over 3 hours, Evan. If you listen to Dan Carlin's Hardcore History. He just got done doing one that was 5 hours long.
Why?
about the Persian Empire.
It's really good. All right, well, there's something to dig into. Yep. We're not going to be 5 hours long today. That's kind of why we were breaking stuff up a little bit.
Oh, thank God. Right now, we don't want to be like SummerSlam, right?
We don't want to be like Summer. Great pop culture reference because, man, was that show too long. We'll talk about
that in just a sec.
But first things first, we want to talk about what happened with Miz, obviously, and talking smack. It's what everybody's talking about right now. Everybody's talking smack, talking about Miz. That's not what that show's about. It's what he said to Daniel Bryan. Renee Young reference. I like it. She's a babe. So let's talk about it, guys. Miz going off on Daniel Bryan. We're not going to play it for you that are listening at home. If you want to listen to it, WWE posted it. So go watch it for yourself. We don't want to get sued for copyright, but, guys, man, Miz had that fire that, you know, that a lot of guys need to get to that next step.
So the question is, did you guys actually, I was on the Twitter machine after SmackDown. I just got home and stuff like that. I'm like, oh man, I want to check out Twitter. All of a sudden it's like, you gotta watch it. So I went back and watched it right there on the network.
Yep.
That whole episode of Talking Smack was perfect.
Oh, it was great.
It was absolutely perfect. But the, as you alluded to, the fire and the honesty in that promo for The Miz, like, that's his best fucking promo he's ever cut.
Which is saying a lot because I think we can all agree that Miz is a top guy on the mic that they have for WWE.
But he also gets a lot of unwarranted hate because he's also a WWE guy.
Yep. Exactly. He's not one of the guys coming in from the indies. He doesn't have that experience. He was more or less homegrown. But, I mean, the guy's always, you know, we can hate on Miz all we want. Yeah, I hate his haircut, but still.
I like it.
You see, you like his haircut.
Yeah, of course.
I hate his music. I hate his theme music. But, I mean, the guy in the ring, he's a great performer. And as I said, you know, one of my favorite things about watching WWE television is when guys are cutting promos. And Miz has always consistently been one of the best guys at doing that. And he is a phenomenal heel. He is so good in that Hollywood character, I think. Mm-hmm. He's fantastic with it. And that promo, you know, a lot of people are wondering if it was a shoot or a work. You know, I'm pretty sure that it was a work.
It was a work shoot.
All right.
Work shoot. Let's define work shoot for people.
It's basically the equivalent of CM Punk's pipe bomb, where he was able to say what he wanted to say, but at the same time, it wasn't that he just shot from the hip and nobody knew about it. Because it'd be one of those things where if Miz was just saying everything that he was saying and he didn't get approval from anybody else, they would have cut his mic. It's a wireless mic.
Now, has anybody actually confirmed what that actually was? Because in my opinion, I think that's something that both Bryan and Miz scripted. I think Miz just did a great job of showing emotion and being real about what happened.
But I mean, like, I feel like a lot of the promo, it felt like there's probably some actual realistic, you know, behind the scenes stuff.
Yeah, of course. But I don't think he caught Bryan by surprise by saying,
"You're a coward.
You're a coward." I think that was part of what it was.
You weren't a coward. You weren't quick.
I think essentially it was bullet points. So it's like, all right.
Yeah, that's what,
you know,
I was saying.
It's like,
say,
okay, so I'm gonna say, okay, you're a coward. It's like, well, I'm going to retort back that you're a coward because you're not wrestling. And if you really wanted to wrestle, you would have quit the WWE.
Yep.
Because there was that sense of realism, because that's in reality, that's what happens when there's like a name that like isn't allowed to wrestle. So he quits, and then he's on the indie scenes, and he's wrestling occasions. So there was that realism because everybody completely understood what he was saying. It was just like, huh? What are you talking about? Independent wrestling? What's that about?
So that brings up a very good point, is why do we just assume when there is a hint of realism in a promo that it's a shoot promo?
Probably because we want to believe that it's a shoot promo. I mean, that's like so cool. Guys going off the cuff and saying what they want to say, and we think that, you know, that raw emotion must mean that there's a sense of that realism behind it. And I think it's also probably just part of the kid wrestling fan inside of us that wants to believe. You know, I still believe. I believe.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it, too, is like once they start to say some of those things where it seems almost personal, it's one of those things where you assume it's a shoot because it doesn't sound like the typical WWE promo that you're hearing on Raw and SmackDown.
So then when we hear that a work shoot promo actually becomes the talk of the town, do you think at some point in time you're going to see less scripted promos because of that? Because you're actually getting raw emotions across. Because that's exactly what a wrestling promo should be.
I don't think so.
Raw emotions coming across. So when you actually do hit it well, and you hit it really good like he did there, when do you your expectations for other promos, they have to come up?
I think the reason that we won't see more work shoot promos, because like you said, it's the talk of the town. But if everybody's doing work shoot promos, that is not special.
Well, it's not even that, but everybody can't do that. Like I said, we know Miz is good on the mic. Right. We know what he can do on the microphone. We know that.
And obviously, he's in movies and TV shows.
He has the passion.
And he's a good actor, so he can convey a work shoot where it seems almost like he's just like, no, fuck whatever I was supposed to say. I'm saying this.
Because, you know, it's not like anybody can do that. If you were to be like, Nick, you know what? You know, you go out there, you just tell Daniel Bryan how you feel, man. You tell him. I'd be like, you know what, Dan, you're a bully, and your stupid face, you're dumb. And it'd be like, that was the worst promo we've ever heard. But Miz was able to just formulate the words that he was trying to say so well, it all flowed really well. Because, I mean, if you think about it, Miz was probably a couple words away from just making that thing a complete disaster. But just how it came out and the raw emotion that he had and just the – I don't want to say scripting, but just the wordplay that he used. I mean, everything was so perfect about it. That's why Punk's was so good. You know, it's not like he was just you don't like bringing up Punk and stuff like that because nobody ever – but when you go back and think about the pipe bomb that Punk dropped and how everybody blew their freaking load about it, the big thing about Punk's was, you know, the same thing where, yeah, he went off the cuff, but the way that he went off the cuff. You know, he's sitting there smiling at the camera, saying hi to Colt Cabana. Yeah. He's sitting here talking about merchandise sales and stuff, but the way that he was presenting it made it even more memorable, better than before. Because we've seen worked shoots all the time, and none of them stick like this.
I think – another way of what you're saying, and I think I'm getting what you're saying, is it's not really what's being said, it's how it's being said.
Yeah.
Is that pretty, so it's one of those things where you could have gave the script that Miz said verbatim, word for word, to somebody. They could memorize it and, you know, said everything line for line, but I don't think it would have conveyed that same emotion as Miz literally getting off of his chair and just looking Daniel right in the eye and just getting really, like, hyped up and pissed off.
And like a good match, you know, that tells a story, that promo told a story. He turned around Daniel Bryan's words on him, you know, saying, oh, why don't you go wrestle with your indie friends at a bingo hall? Oh, yeah. You're a coward. I'm turning my words on you. I'm more or less turning this our discussion into a story, opposed to just getting up and saying, you know what, you quit on the fans, you know, you could have wrestled somewhere else, but you didn't. Instead of saying that, he had a different way of working with his words.
And even Daniel adding to that is like, well, if I was able to wrestle, then I would have wrestled for the Intercontinental title. Like, bullshit. You don't want to wrestle because you would have quit.
Exactly. And that's the best part about it. I think the question that we go into now, does this improve Miz's stock? Are we going to – was this what the Miz needed? Are we going to see a resurgence of this Intercontinental Championship, Jesse? Is this going to be a mainstay on SmackDown now?
I think so. And a lot of that really kind of is just your brand is centric now. You need all your titles to be clicking as hard and as fast as possible. Because with The Miz, what he is really is that gatekeeper to the top echelon right now. And that's good for him, but it also sucks for him because he can't get to the top echelon because he's the gatekeeper for the top echelon. Mm-hmm. What it really does, though, it brings renewed focus to him as a performer because he's one of the most underappreciated performers on that whole roster. He might be one of the most underappreciated performers in all of wrestling today.
Agreed.
Because of what he does. I think you definitely see a renewed emphasis on that because now he has talking points for it.
Yep.
Because he can keep on bringing it up, and it gives him a story with that authority figure on SmackDown, which has been very much, you know, happy-go-lucky. Oh, hey, Brian. Oh, hey, Shane.
It's definitely an interesting angle. It's really it's something people, I think, are going to tune in for. And we're going to talk about Raw here a little bit, but before we transition to Raw, since we can kind of do our little our little segue here, in your guys' opinion, Jesse, did you watch Raw and SmackDown this week?
I watched SmackDown. I did not get a chance to watch Raw.
Okay, well.
But I was able to follow Raw, and I know kind of what's going on.
That might be kind of how things are going, especially with football starting on Mondays. But, I mean, from what you guys have heard or seen, I mean, I've been watching all the Raws and SmackDowns. Do you think SmackDown right now is outperforming Raw?
I think it has a better focus because it has less parts to focus on.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, do you have an opinion, Riley?
Well, I think we kind of talked about this before the show started, but it's one of those things where SmackDown – even though it has less talent to work with than Raw, at the same time, it's still only 2 hours, and as a result, they can build more on quality versus quantity. And it's one of those things where right now with Raw, it's a three-hour show, and even though you have the guys to fill it, it's still 3 hours, so you're getting burnt out. Case in point, SummerSlam was, 4 hours? They had four pre-show matches, and by then, like, you could tell later in the night as SummerSlam progressed that, you know, it was, it, you know, there could be a great match, but then, you know, the crowd's going to get, you know, they're going to focus on things that don't matter. You know, case in point, that they were booing the belt and focusing on that opposed to paying attention to Rollins and Balor. And even Rollins was like, I'm disappointed in
Brooklyn.
Yeah,
he tweeted that out. Before we talk about the pay-per-views this weekend, let's also kind of move along a little bit to Raw, because I want to touch on that a little bit so we can kind of keep things at least a little bit structured here. On Raw, if we want to go back to SummerSlam here, I think we can all agree that the Rollins-Balor match was very good, but I don't think we necessarily need to go into it too much because that's we got so much other stuff to talk about. But when you talk about the storyline of that moving forward, we saw Balor injured, Universal titles relinquished. Now they're moving with the Fatal 4-Way next week. What do you guys think about that? And even the talk about Rollins being an unsafe worker.
I think a lot of that shtick with Rollins is it's unfortunate, but I don't think we're going to be seeing that powerbomb into the corner or anything anytime soon again. Yeah. I mean, Sting got hurt on it. Balor got hurt on it. Took a lot of momentum away from that title win, and basically you're back to square one now.
Yep.
So he might move that spot away. Plus, yeah, I mean, he hasn't really had the best track record with that powerbomb, too. Remember, he did blow out his knee with that sunset flip powerbomb. So maybe it's best to just cut your losses on that one. I think it's going to be interesting where they go with the Fatal 4-Way because you're still going to have you have two stalwarts, of course, in Reigns and Rollins in that match, but you also have Kevin Owens, and you have Big Cass, which was interesting. Big Cass ended up getting himself into that matchup, so that kind of really shows where everyone's stock in Big Cass is there. I wouldn't be shocked if the belt either goes on Rollins or Reigns. I'm pulling for Owens, and I would be pleasantly shocked if Cass won the belt, but I think the backlash for that would be tremendous.
Yeah, I agree, too, unless I can't see a way that they can make Big Cass work out as of right now just because, you know, he's his partner in crime, Enzo Amore.
Yeah.
And right now Enzo Amore is more over than Cass, but Cass has the credibility of being a champion, but I still don't think it can work right now. I do also really think that it's time, you know, this is the perfect opportunity. You're just finished SummerSlam. You're in that part of the season where you can probably give a guy like Kevin Owens the belt and see how he works with it before WrestleMania, because we are still so far away from the road of WrestleMania where I don't think, you know, this new Universal Championship is necessarily important to have on a guy like Reigns or Rollins at this point that's super established. You can kind of give a guy like Owens a chance with the belt and see what he can do with it leading up to, I think, their next pay-per-view is Hell in a Cell?
No, their next pay-per-view is
Clash of Champions.
Oh, Clash of Champions.
Night of Champions.
It is Clash of Champions. Whatever. Yeah, yeah. So I think you can go that route, and I think Kevin Owens would be a smart decision here, but obviously a safe decision would be Reigns or Rollins.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that, too, is that from everything I've been reading is that that Fatal 4-Way, the qualifying match was essentially that the gauge of interest is like, all right, these guys won. How do you guys feel about it? And I think a lot of that, especially like with Reigns, like being in the 4-Way in the first place is kind of seeing, all right, he got super over, you know, doing the whole program with Rusev. Now that he's in this program for the Universal title, does he still have that stink of people booing him? And you could kind of see a little bit of that. So it's like, all right, so clearly, mid-card title, no problem. Main title, he's still, you know, people don't like it.
I think the thing that Raw, and the great part about this brand split, like, I think the best part about this brand split was you watch SmackDown and how much people are talking about Miz and, you know, how much people are talking about AJ Styles and John Cena just putting together quite possibly a match of the year candidate at SummerSlam.
Yeah.
When you're Raw, you know, this puts you in a corner a little bit here because now, you know, I know it's necessarily you're competing within the same company, but at the same time, you want to make sure that Raw isn't falling underneath SmackDown. I mean, this is your flagship show. This is Monday Night Raw, dude. So, you know, when it comes down to that, it's great for competition purposes because now you have to think outside the box. You can't just be like, just give it to Rollins.
It would be very similar if you had your two top draft picks in fantasy football go down. That's basically what they had with Balor and Banks going down the way they did. Now they got to go back to square one. They brought up Bayley. That's a huge move for them.
Yep.
And now you're trying to move on from Balor, who's going to be out 6 months.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Balor, great option. You know, you're talking about bringing in that new era. You give it to Balor, you see what he can do with the title.
Yeah.
Give it to another guy that hasn't had the chance to run with it yet. You know, a guy like Kevin Owens, I wish there were a couple other options in there, but you know, you have to have the Rollins and the Reigns in there. But I think, again, perfect opportunity to give a guy like Owens the belt and just see what happens because, hey, worst comes to worst, have him drop it in a month. You know, or 2 months or whatever it is. That's that simple.
Could you imagine the feud that you could have, like Owens and Rollins?
Yeah.
Owens is just kind of looking like a bum, and Rollins is like, you don't look like a champion.
You don't do CrossFit like me, man.
This is what a champion looks like. And Owens is like, I'm a champ.
Yeah, I'm a champ.
I'm a champ.
Fight for my family.
Yeah, I'm a prize fighter.
I'm a prize fighter. Yeah. My family. Yeah. So that's Raw. Obviously, also really quick, I want to touch on, guys, NXT this weekend, not related to WWE. SummerSlam, we'll just say it went too long. One thing I did want to talk about, let's hit it really quick. Brock Lesnar and Randy Orton finish. Another thing that's been just, man, really busy week in WWE.
Yeah, lots those, of people work shoot type of finish.
Lots of people talking about the elbows to the head. What did you guys think?
I was perfectly fine with it. It told a hell of a fucking good story. Mm-hmm. The whole feud was very much built around, can Orton hit the RKO on Lesnar? That's his only move. That's all he had was the RKO. They never even gave him an ounce of credibility against Lesnar. Lesnar's coming off that cage fight that he had, basically dominated Mark Hunt, won by decision. He's going to go in there, and he was going to do what Brock Lesnar was going to do.
Yep.
So it got to the point where Brock Lesnar got irritated with Randy Orton because he got hit with the RKO, got hit with the DDT, got hit with another RKO, and would have got punted, right? So, of course, you know, Orton kicks out of the, you know, the F5. Brock's just like, screw it. He just went downtown, pound town on the
dude. Yeah, definitely.
And I think it was a good finish. It was an absolutely fantastic finish. It ended up being probably my second favorite match out of SummerSlam just because of the finish alone.
I think with the TKO finish, the one thing I didn't like about it, like I like the message of it, you know, just that entire beatdown where literally he just busted open, just bleeding like a stuffed pig.
Well, as someone who bleeds the hard way, as somebody appreciate
exactly.
It.
But I think as far as like conveying that TKO, it felt weird just because of the fact that it seemed very stalled out compared to how an actual TKO is determined, like in MMA, where, you know, it's literally the fact of once the guy's down, he can't defend himself. Within like 2-3 seconds, the ref is pulling off the fighter and saying it's over, it's TKO. Where this is one of those things where, you know, Lesnar, you know, took off the gloves, he started putting the elbows to it, and then you get up. The ref wouldn't really do anything. He'd get down to start, you know, beating on Orton again. And eventually, after that kind of drawn out ending, then it was determined by TKO. And even then, it was kind of like, oh, he sets up bleeding. Uh-huh. And it's like, all right, match is over.
I do agree with you in that sense. And it's something that I dislike about WWE a little bit, but it's a part of what they do. Just because, obviously, we see guys that get into arm bars, and they can be surviving an arm bar for 5 minutes sometimes.
Yeah.
But when you look at
or
UFC,
getting punched in the head 10 times, I'm protected in the corner.
Yeah. But when you look at UFC, it's ankle lock. Oh, I'm done. Get me out of this, dude. Yeah. But you know, WWE,
that or literally trying to squirm around just to get out of that position.
Yeah. So I mean, that's
instead of
Yeah. So I mean, obviously, pro wrestling, pro wrestling a little bit different. You know,
right. At least it wasn't like the TKO and No Mercy.
Oh yeah. Yep. I remember the TKO and No Mercy. Yep. I do remember that. Yeah. The thing I liked a little bit about this match is they did kind of book it like a UFC match. You know, they booked it ahead of time. It's Orton and Lesnar. That's how we're going to do it. That's
big
how
fight.
We're going to do things. Big fight feel. Mm-hmm. You know, it's similar to – it is similar to how you have at UFC. Oh, you know, Mark Hunt, he's got a sick right hook. Oh, you know, Orton, he's got a sick RKO. That's his move.
Yeah.
Yep, exactly. So that's kind of what it seemed like they're building up.
I know there was a lot of criticism of not giving Orton any offense, really. But I think the criticism is very unwarranted because Orton just got off the shelf.
Yep. Yeah.
Like, how much brain rust does this guy actually have? And he goes out there and he takes the biggest hits from Orton, like, you know, from Lesnar right away.
And you build that story of the RKO. It comes out of nowhere. Orton gets beat up for 10 straight minutes and all of a sudden, boom, RKO, he's back into it. That's just how. That's his game, and that's how they built it up to be, and that's what the story they told. Really quick, though, guys, before we move on to our Spotlight Squared Circle, it's going to be the Dojo Boys this week. I did want to touch on NXT a little bit because, again, happening this week in another huge event, we saw Nakamura become the new NXT champion, Revival, and Ciampa and Gargano put on one hell of a match.
That
was
a classic.
We saw the debut of Ember Moon.
Athena,
she freaking killed it. And man, things are, you know, when you see all these guys getting called up, it worries you. But then when you see some of the new talent, the people that NXT has right now, you're not worried at all for where that brand's going to go because, oh my goodness, can a
and
lot
you
of those
forgot to
go.
Talk about like the most glorious thing to happen.
And that was
Bobby Roode's entrance.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. That's actually the first thing that I watched when I watched NXT. I fast forwarded a little bit just to watch.
What
was
your guys' like thoughts on the Joe Nakamura match? Cause I know like last week I really alluded to that. Maybe you should really check your expectations at the door for that match. It was rough at first, but that last stretch, Perfect.
Yeah, it was. I thought it was a great match. I mean, the show, in my opinion, it's one of those shows where it's so hard to necessarily say this match was the best match on the card because you had, man, that tag match blew the roof off of that place. Mm-hmm. And Ember Moon's, I mean, I've never seen Athena before, so her debut.
And Asuka Bailey, too, was perfect.
A great match, you know, I mean, it did exactly what it needed to do, and it gave Bailey the perfect send-off that she needed. I mean, even Austin Aries and No Way Jose was a great match. No Way Jose, I mean, working with Austin Aries, exactly why he's there, able to help these young kids get better at what they do, even though he ate the loss. I mean, No Way Jose still looking like a guy that can be a contributor here in the next couple of months. But when you go back to
what was good about that match is that it showed that No Way Jose, that, you know, he can dance and, you know, have fun and all that stuff. But in reality, when it comes down to it, he can get serious and he can, you know, go into a fight. And he one of those things where don't sleep on No Way Jose because he can actually still go tough and, you know.
But going back to Nakamura and Samoa Joe, I mean, just the hard hitting style that you love to see in these guys just going at it. I mean, I went back. I watched that match actually twice, and I think it was better the second time. It was a, you know, just what you'd expected, but it still was an awesome matchup. And you know, I know that, you know, Vic Ross told me he doesn't think Samoa Joe. I mean, I think he thinks Samoa Joe should be called up. But at first, he said it's not his time. But I think Samoa Joe, this is that dude's time to get called up to the main roster because, especially with the thin rosters, he'd be a perfect guy to step in either show and kind of.
Where would you like to see him go?
I think you know, that's tough. That's a tough one, man. I want to tell him to go to SmackDown just because I want to see Joe and AJ Styles in WWE. But I mean, in Raw would work perfect because then you have the opportunity to skyrocket him to heel status, and Kevin Owens can take over as a face, which I think he'd be great at doing. So I mean, Raw kind of needs some more top tier talent after you losing Finn Balor and
you get
the
Kevin Owens Samoa Joe match. You didn't really get to see much in NXT.
Exactly.
Or the program, rather.
I think he could go to either show and just knock it out of the park, and I think both shows would be totally lucky to have him. I don't think SmackDown needs him. I think Raw needs him more, but I think he can go to either show. Hmm. What do you think of the match? You thought it was a good match?
I thought it was a good match. Yeah. I thought it was a really good match. Cool. It was a solid match.
Cool. Yeah, awesome. All right. Well, we just talked WWE national stuff for like a good, that was a long
it's
time.
Probably about half hour. Real
like
time.
45 minutes, maybe?
Yeah, we hammered up a little bit.
That's always fun, though, just talking wrestling. That's one of the best parts about this podcast. We don't get to do this all the time.
Yeah. Are you getting a little misty eyed?
No, I'm not. I'm actually just getting, I'm just a little upset that the only interview that we can pitch right now is the Dojo Boys. Shoot on the dojos. That's okay, though. They get enough shit all the time. They get crapped on all the time. It's pretty hilarious.
Yeah, but, I mean, they're making strides. I mean,
They're like one of the best tag teams that you can watch in Wisconsin right now.
They had a hell of a match against American Violence last week at Stadium Mania.
Yeah, they did. They had a very solid street fight. They're really – it's one of those things where, you know, you can pair up two people and just hope that they stick. But it's two people that came from the Dojo Pain that they're like, all right, well, we're going to put you together. We'll call you the Dojo Boys because you need to have a tag name. And they rolled with it. Now they're starting to turn it into their own. They're making it their own, essentially. They're not just guys calling themselves
the Dojo Boys.
Because for a long time, it was just Adam Grace, Colin Brooks, and they're the Dojo Boys. Now it's the Dojo Boys, Colin Brooks, Adam Grace, because they're working like a team. They're acting like a team. You know, that's why they're getting so over in RCCW, is because they look and act like a team compared to every other tag team they face, which is just two guys that are just stuck together. It's a very patchwork.
And I wouldn't even say it's only because of the guys they're facing. I mean, the charisma that they show, obviously they have a lot of skill in
and
the
ring, and that's part of it too. That's
a big part of it.
Yeah, I kind of blanketed over when I said, you know, look and act like a team. But I mean,
you were shooting on that.
Yeah, a little bit. But
you gotta resend yourself really quick so you can say that's not what you meant.
No, it's just like with everything that they do with their entrance, with their. They're in ring, how they're working as a team. Like, one of my favorite parts, the fact that, you know, some guys will tag, they'll just do like one double move and then they're, you know, back in the apron. They'll do a string of moves so that makes it look like they're, you know, adding to what the typical tag, you know, team maneuvers would do. Yeah. So, you know, maybe it's a double line followed by a double hip toss where it's a couple things to exploit that, hey, we're working like a team, we're both thinking the same thing, we're going to both do it.
You know, I was going to say, it's great, right? Because, supposedly you get the 5 seconds you can do the double team, and, no ref actually really takes care of that at RCCW.
Yeah.
I would literally pop if they just tagged once. And they just double teamed a dude the whole match, and the other guys on the corner the whole time were like, "Come on,
what's going on, ref? Do you not read the rule book, ref?"
Ref's like, "I can't do anything about it." Get on the
apron. Maybe we'll have to pitch that to him. That's something they like. These guys, Dojo Boys, too super. Being in the locker room with them, actually having to be able to imagine them a couple times. I mean, they're really creative. Mm-hmm. Always willing to do new stuff in the ring. They listen to everything. They're great young guys that pretty much go out there and act like vets, and that's the great part about it. They're probably going to get crap for it, but they have a certain kind of a swagger to them, being the Dojo Boys and stuff. But we'll talk a little bit about that with them here. Up next in our Spotlight and Squared Circle, so don't go anywhere.
This is Stacey Shadows.
We've said it numerous times that Stacey Shadows is one bad bitch.
And you're listening to Grapple Talk, the best indie wrestling podcast right now known to man.
It's not about the shoes. It's about knowing where you're going. Not forgetting where you started. It's about having the courage to fail. Not breaking when you're broken. Taking everything you've been given. And making something better. It's about work before glory. And what's inside of you is doing what they say you can't. It's not about the shoes. It's about what you do in them. It's about being who you were born to be.
Hey, Grapple Talk listeners, this is Chris from Spot Monkey Media. Are you a professional wrestler, a promoter, a business owner? Spot Monkey Media is graphic design for the wrestling professional. We offer design services for t-shirts, event posters, 8x10s, logos, and even ring gear. But if you're not in the wrestling business, we work outside the ropes. Go to spotmonkeymedia.com for more information. Spot Monkey Media, create your legacy.
Hello, wrestling fans. Colt Cabana coming to you live from the 1 Hour Tease Arena in beautiful Chicago, Illinois. The pro wrestling action has been great so far. As you can see, Joey really dominating the ring so far. There's a beautiful belly-to-back suplex. And looks like Joey's shirt has been ripped.
What's up with that? You ripped my shirt.
Let's go check an instant replay, see exactly what happened. There you can see Joey's shirt ripped from the collar, and that's not good when you're trying to wear your pro wrestling t-shirt.
Man, you ripped my shirt. It's my only shirt. Joey.
Hey, looks like Ryan from 1 Hour Tees just threw Joey Ryan a brand new t-shirt.
Thanks, Pro Wrestling Tees.
ProWrestlingTees.com, over 3,000 wrestling t-shirts designed and sold by pro wrestlers. Wrestlers such as Steve Austin, CM Punk, Macho Man, Mick Foley, DDP, Andre the Giant, Jake the Snake, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, Scott Hall, Ted DiBiase, Colt Cabana, Joey Ryan, Cliff Compton, and the entire Bullet Club. All stores owned by pro wrestlers. Support pro wrestling today and visit ProWrestlingTees.com.
You're listening to Grapple Talk.
Why is Vic's office in the men's room? Can anybody answer this question?
Keeping you up to date on the Midwestern Independent Wrestling.
Remember, kids, always wash your hands after going to the bathroom.
And now, the moment you've been waiting for. It's Spotlight in the Squared Circle.
Sitting here with the Dojo Boys, Colin Brooks and Adam Grace, or Adam Grace and Colin Brooks, whatever you want to call it. I don't really care the order.
I prefer Colin Brooks, Adam Grace.
And
That's fine with me, actually.
You're fine with that?
I'm a team player, so.
All right. So, I mean, that's good. So, Colin Brooks and Adam Grace, the Dojo Boys, here at the Spotlight Squared Circle. Guys, we've talked to Colin, we talked to Adam. Haven't talked to you guys, as a group, so I figured we had to actually...
First one together.
I know, right?
Grapple Talk, you're here first.
Yeah. So, here's the thing I was wondering. So, you guys train together. We've established that. Do you guys know right away you guys wanted to start actually teaming up, or is that something that the higher-ups are like, you guys are going to go together?
I think it was a little bit of both. In my debut match, actually, I was with Colin and Sadist.
Is that Stadiumania?
Stadiumania 1, yeah, 2 years ago now. But there was some seeds planted there of not necessarily a tag team, but we did some double team moves on DeSadist, and I think from there people kind of saw it. And we actually became the Dojo Boys really early on in my career, at least. I think in only like my 10th match, we had our first tag team match that was in Fond du Lac. So it was a no-brainer for a lot of the bookers to pair us up together.
Yeah, I remember I didn't even realize that we were like a thing as a tag team until way too far into it. I just kind of figured me and you were paired together for random matches, and then I looked back and I was like, oh wait, we're a tag team.
Yeah.
We're a tag team now.
So I think I've said this to you guys a few times, but I think what I really enjoy about you guys as a tag team is the fact that you guys actually act and look like a tag team, because there's so many people I see, whether it's in the independent wrestling companies or even like WWE or something like that, you always just see guys that are like, hey, we're kind of like sharing a common bond, so we're going to start working together. But you guys, like, you know, you guys have good chemistry together because you guys obviously know each other for so long. And on top of that, like, you guys are actually connecting. You're stringing moves together. It's not just the you tag, one guy hits a double team, and then the other guy's out. You're hitting stuff and then another thing and another thing to set up, oh, we actually work well as a team.
Yeah, I think one thing that really helps with that is we're actually really good friends outside the ring and, you know, behind the scenes. Colin was my first friend in wrestling, so he's been my friend for a long time. And I think that certainly helps our chemistry in the ring, and we're not just two guys randomly, you know, paired up as a one-off. So that certainly helps with our chemistry. We play off each other on the mic in the match. It's a really huge help.
So Colin was your first friend. Colin, was he your first friend?
Yeah, I think that's safe to say. I think another big thing with me and him, we're developing a chemistry and we're starting to figure things out inside the ring, in front of the crowd, together. But I think a lot of it has to do with us also outside of the ring, like figuring out the wrestling culture, life, whatever you want to call it, you know, together, since we started training virtually at the same time. He's really the only guy who, you know, started right around the time I did, and we've just been going through all these things together, and I think it's only helped in the ring.
Well, I know that you're from the Stevens Point, New London area, and you're from Oshkosh, so do you guys, if you can, do you guys usually try to, like, ride with each other as much as you can, just so you can kind of build on that chemistry on the road?
Yeah. It's always convenient when we can.
Yeah.
It's always enjoyable.
The lacrosse trips have certainly turned into a thing. That's a fun 3-hour ride. I mean, you think driving 3 hours off a road trip, that sucks. But, you know, we certainly make it fun, and we got Sadist with us, and we really enjoy coming to lacrosse.
Yeah, and that's one thing I noticed, too, is, like, when you get, like, a good group of, like, people in your car, that trip, like, a 3-hour trip can be like, holy shit, we're here. Yeah. Like, didn't we just get on the road, like, 20 minutes ago?
Yeah.
And, you know, and the other side, too, like, if you're just driving by yourself and you're just like, man, in 3 hours, this needs to hurry up. But, you know, if you're just, like, palling around, talking with people, all of a sudden you're just like, holy crap.
Yeah, and we're starting to travel more as a tag team. WPW is obviously our home for the Dojo Boys, but we started branching off even into Illinois, the northern Illinois area. We had our first Illinois booking a few months ago, and we had a blast down there, and hopefully we can keep branching out westward and southward, and hopefully, you know, fingers crossed, turn it into a countrywide thing, you know, if we keep playing our cards right and people dig us. So
Dojo Boys and Pro Wrestling Guerrilla?
That'd be awesome.
I think, like, when the Dojo Boys started being booked by companies as, like, a unit, RCCW, when we went down to Illinois, that kind of really hit me, like, oh, the Dojo Boys are, like, a thing, you know? I just always viewed us as Colin Brooks, as Adam Grace, and just tagging together. But the Dojo Boys themselves are a completely separate entity.
That's how we were, like, when we first started out, too. Like, we were just two really green, really young guys learning their way in the business, just generic, babyface, happy to be here team. But then Colin started doing this thing on his own where he would shoot money out of a gun. And he was kind enough to bring it, to let me be a part of it with the Dojo Boys. And that really has really helped our stock, I think, because, like, for this Illinois booking, for example, the crap could give a shit less about us when we first got there. They'd never seen us before. They didn't know anything about us. Like, we were a babyface team there. You were doing the high fives. You know, half the people will stick their hand out, half won't. But all of a sudden, we shot the money out, and bam, all eyes were on us. That was a really cool feeling to know that, you know, we're starting to get it.
I remember Thetis would always say to me, like around the time of my first match when I was trying to figure out a character, his big thing was like, how are the people going to remember you once the show is over? What are they going to remember you as? And I think the best thing about the Money Gun is even at the very, very least, if they just remember us as that tag team that shot the paper money out of their gun.
Yeah. Like,
and I think with that, it's helped us find our personality as a team, but also individually, mm-hmm. just playing off each other in the ring.
Sure.
I know I'm finding myself more and more the more I tag with him as an individual and as a tag team.
So speaking of how the crowd will think of you when the show's over, I think I've told you this before, but I'll say it again. You guys came to La Crosse starting in January, and one of my coworkers, like, I remember it was, like, I think the 2 days after. It was, like, the Sunday after the show because it was on a Friday. And he was just going around to everybody at the office, and he's just like, oh, my God, you got to come to RCCW. There's these guys, the Dojo Boys. Oh, my God, they're just really douchey, fratty, like, young college kids, and it's just absolutely perfect. Like, do you think this is a good way to describe you guys? Is like, you know, if you're like, hey, summarize the Dojo Boys in, like, one word.
Yeah, I think that is actually a really good thing, actually. And I'm glad that you brought that up, because that first lacrosse booking that we had in January, I think really that match alone and just that atmosphere really put us from an 8 to a 9. Like, we really brought it that night, and the fact that we were able to get such big heat in lacrosse, like, they had never seen us, they didn't know anything about us, but we established good characters right away, and we got good heat, so that was that first match we had in lacrosse was a huge confidence boost for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that first booking in lacrosse was a very big confidence booster for the Dojo Boys as a tag team. Even, like, when we got there in the locker room, this is going to sound stupid, but, like, the pre-show meeting, when they were like, yeah, can we, the Dojo Boys are here, let's give them a hand, thank them for making the trip, I was like, what?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks, I guess.
Yeah, and the money certainly has helped, like I said, because for WPW, they shot a commercial at Fox 11 News, as some of you may have seen, and we, off the air, we shot the money, like, at the camera to see if it would work and how it would work, and we ended up missing a few bills on the floor at Fox 11, and our Facebook page got blown up by all the Fox 11 anchors.
Oh, really?
And all that, saying, look what we found. Like, it was a cool feeling.
Nice. So speaking of that, too, so, I mean, you said that being in lacrosse really upgraded the dojos from an 8 to a 9. On top of that, you guys have been tagging, like you said, all over the area and everything. You guys also had the chance to wrestle each other individually twice, once at WPW in Stevens Point, and then you also just got to do that in Oshkosh. Would you say that tagging has helped you to kind of say, oh, we can be the main event in a singles match as, you know, two young guys and not have an issue? Do you think that tag team chemistry really helped with those matches to make them great?
I didn't know, but I figured if there was anybody who I would gel with in the ring in a spot like that, it would be Brandon. And it was,
I don't know who Brandon is, but
Adam. That's my name. I still do it. Yeah, it was. I'm very happy that the chemistry was there and we gelled as much as I hoped we would.
Yeah, I really think it did help. You know, I knew all the moves that he does and that he does well. He knew all the moves that I do well, and I think we certainly got all of our good shit in both matches. And we've actually, a lot of people know this, we've actually wrestled each other individually 5 times now, but the WPW and ACW show were like the legit shows that we were mm-hmm. on as a team.
And then kind of building off that as well, man, I had a question. I totally forgot it. Well, I'll think of that. We'll get back to another question here. So, you guys have wrestled Illinois, Wisconsin. Is there anywhere that you guys are looking? Like, you know, like, we're joking about, like, Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, the Dojo Boys would make a thing over there. Is there anywhere you're looking at right now that you're hoping you can actually essentially hopefully start working in realistically anytime soon?
No company in particular. We just want the stages to keep getting bigger for us.
It's a good way to put it.
We're just taking it, you know, one booking at a time, getting better every match, hopefully. Whether, you know, it's a good match or a bad match, you always got something to learn out of every match. So
sure.
We're just taking it slow and we're just going along with the ride.
I very much think the Dojo Boys, especially lately, with the heel thing that's really taken off, and the way we've adopted the whole, like, millennials stereotype of those damn kids these days.
Yep.
That's us. I really think the Dojo Boys, this might be just only the tip of the iceberg. I'm really excited for what happens, and there's no set company, but, you know.
Yeah.
Take one match at a time.
You know, it's funny you bring that up, because that's something I also want to talk to you guys about, is started to see this a little bit at WPW. You guys laid out American Violence, Ben McCoy and Sadus, and then all of a sudden I see on your Snapchat feed that you're essentially doing a video selfie while you're lying on the ground next to Sadus and Ben. Where did you guys come up with that idea to essentially start using social media as like a thing that you're doing live in a match?
I don't remember exactly how it started. I think probably is something that we were just joking around about, and then it got thought about, and we just had our phones with us during that segment.
Yeah, and we were sitting in the crowd that whole time.
Yeah.
Before that run-in, and that run-in didn't happen until after intermission, so...
We was hanging out with wrestling masks.
Yeah.
Because, like, I noticed that you guys did that, too, in lacrosse. You guys are out for the Battle Royal, and you're just like, we're here, all that stuff, so...
Hardest part is the gear doesn't have pockets.
Yeah.
So I gotta stuff a phone down my pants.
I mean, you might have to invest in, like, gear to actually get some pockets made, right? Or, you get, like, one of those, like, cell phone, like, belt loops or whatever, like, one of those clips, you know what I'm talking about?
Are those in style, though, Alex?
I don't know. I mean, those were a thing, like, when my mom was working at a cell
company.
Maybe
we'll bring fanny packs back, too.
Hey, you might be able to do that. Who knows?
I'm running out of room in the trunks, though, with all the money and the phone.
Yeah. I mean, people are just going to think that you're stuffing at that point. Are you stuffing?
Yes.
All right.
Absolutely.
Sorry. I didn't mean to call you on the spot and just be like, I think the thing I really like about that, and we talked about this with Brock a while back at the First Now show back in May. Like, you're saying he likes it just because nobody else is doing that. And it's so true, because I can't think of a single tag team that does that. Like, everybody nowadays is, like, posting on social media, like, you know, the results of their match, where they're going to be, advertising that. But nobody's using social media while they're in their match.
I've always thought, since I started wrestling... I still haven't figured it out exactly, but there's definitely a way, you know, nowadays in 2016 to use that social media. And the Snapchat thing was great, because I think it was my idea originally to put the video. I had the video scanning across Sadist and Ben,
mm-hmm.
but Adam laid down and took the selfie next to Ben. It said, like, hey, I just killed him or something.
Sure.
And his selfie picture got way more likes than my video.
Yeah.
He took my idea and he just tweaked it to make it so much better. I overthought it.
Yeah.
As always.
Shocker. No.
Because the selfie is so much easier scrolling through a news feed to click like.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, plus, too, it's really hard to like stuff on Snapchat, though.
Yeah, we posted it on every form of social media.
Sure, that makes sense. But I think that's I think it's a great idea, just because, again, I don't know many tag teams are going to do that. So, kind of moving forward, what do you think you're going to try to do to incorporate that to the next level? You're going to start Snapchatting while one guy's on the apron and the other guy's working?
It's not a bad idea.
Don't give anyone else any ideas.
Yeah.
All right. I can't spoil all the secrets, I guess.
Whatever a millennial would do, that word has been...
We'll do it.
Yeah.
We're thinking about changing our name to something along those lines, too.
Sure.
So
we want to tag, like, 10 years from now and be the boys still, right?
Grapple Talk, you heard this first, Dojo Boys, a name change coming.
Okay.
Within a year or two, maybe.
Yeah, because, like, I mean, the Dojo Boys, like, makes sense, like, when you guys were starting out, because obviously you both came from the Dojo of Pain. But I think as your gimmick evolves, like, I mean, that makes sense to change it. And, Colin, I mean, you've changed your name, like, 5 times at this point.
Three?
Three?
Yeah. I've gone 2 years as Colin Brooks now.
All right, that's so good. I mean, that's great that it's stuck.
Yeah, the Dojo Boys, that name was just given to us.
I think it was given to you as a joke, wasn't it?
I don't know.
Actually, like, they gave it to us because we were going, in WPW, we were wrestling for the tag belts for the first time, and they needed us on the poster. But the bookers at the time refused to put us on the poster if we didn't have a tag team name.
Yeah.
So Nathan Gus actually just put the Dojo Boys on there. It's kind of a joke, kind of like just, I just need something to throw out there.
Just like, sure, this is a name and this fits.
It stuck. And that seems like that's how a lot of things work in pro wrestling. Things just like, I need to think of something on the spot. Oh, I'm just going to be this and that sticks. You
literally
know?
Throwing stuff against a wall and seeing what sticks.
Yeah.
Much like, I never thought Colin Brooks would stick either.
So, so obviously working on stuff that millennials would do, but like, what tag teams are you essentially looking at for like inspiration? Of just like, oh man, like we should start kind of incorporate some of that into our arsenal.
One team, actually kind of an older team now that we really, not like look up to, I would say, but like really think that we're similar with is Too Cool. We do a lot of similar stuff. Colin has sent me videos of things that they did that he thinks we should do, just because they were really similar characters to what we are now, just with the outrageous antics. And they were young too. They just wanted to have fun. They were just looking to make a name for themselves, and that's exactly what we're trying to do. So
you guys gonna try to get like a big Samoan to join your group essentially?
Could Sadis be our Rikishi?
Could be. While we're on this topic, we need to have a 6-man match with Shane Hills. I mean, it's the Dojo Master and the Dojo Boys. The pieces are aligned. Someone just needs to make this.
Dojo fam.
Could Shane Hills be your Rikishi?
He could.
Would love that.
He would. Yeah. Shane loves anything.
Another team, very much that. Obviously, every tag team wrestling in America now is probably modeling themselves after the Young Bucks.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think there's a lot of tag teams in Wisconsin that really fit that Young Bucks style, and I think if we could be, for lack of a better term, like the Young Bucks of Wisconsin, just with their attitudes and their crazy, their spots and stuff.
Basically take ideas for them, but not blatantly rip them off.
Right, yeah.
That makes sense.
Who's not a fan of the Young Bucks, you know?
That's true. I mean, they're blowing up, so I mean, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. To make sense to get on the Young Buck train.
Yeah.
The Young Bucks. No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. It needs work. Guys, anything else before we wrap this up?
I can't think of anything.
I got nothing.
All right.
That's about it.
Well, Dojos, Colin, Adam, thanks for being on Gravel Talk.
Thanks for having us, man.
This biz out.
As I've said before, we've only just begun. You understand? Learn to love it. Learn to live with it. Diamonds are forever. And so is
Gravel Talk.
What's up, guys? It's one of three of your favorite wrestling podcast hosts, AC Riley from Grapple Talk here. Are you a listener or even a host of another podcast and you just don't know how to get the word out about the podcast? Send us a promo advertising what your show is about to grappletalkpodcast@gmail.com. And if you're not a podcast host, but maybe something independent wrestling that you're looking to get the word out about, shoot us an email with your promo as well. We don't discriminate. Let's face it, it's tough for the small guys to get the word out. So what better way than to band together with fellow small guys, aka advertising on a podcast? It's that easy to do. Just send a promo to grappletalkpodcast@gmail.com and we'll make sure people know about you, your podcast, or maybe something else related to independent wrestling. Hopefully you're enjoying the show. And as always, support independent wrestling.
Ryan Yanishadis here from the Ringside Report to remind you to watch the Ringside Report every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 6 p.m. on YouTube. Brandon McGrath and I discuss WWE, TNA, and the local independent scene. Go to youtube.com/RB Enterprises. That is the Ringside Report, your front row seat to all things wrestling.
Talk about your Psalms. Talk about John 3:16. Austin 316 says...
Stop watching your neighbors get undressed. You're listening to Grapple Talk.
Come on, that's not necessary.
All he's got to do is...
Download the latest Grapple Talk podcast on iTunes. Just type Grapple Talk into the search bar. It's not rocket science.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
Tune into the Indie Power Rankings reveal every Tuesday at 3 p.m. Eastern on Blog Talk Radio, Filling the Void Radio Network. You can also subscribe to Filling the Void Radio Network on iTunes. Give a follow to the Indie Power Rankings on Twitter at Indie Power Ranking, no GS. Instagram at Indie Power Rankings. On Facebook, facebook.com/IndiePowerRankings. You can also go to the website where you can see the top 10 for the week, the tag team top 5, anything else independent wrestling related, indiepowerrankingsipr.wordpress.com.
Always good talking with the Dojos, guys, because it's one of those things where Colin has come down the studio and we've talked with him, and we've kind of been there following essentially his growth as a professional wrestler. We got to talk to Adam when we were essentially hyping the ACW big anniversary show, but it was kind of cool talking with them as a group and kind of getting the mentality of, you know, how they've grown as a tag team, as the Dojo Boys, you know, kind of understanding, you know, why they got paired up, why they got called the Dojo Boys, And even the exclusive fact for us to know that they're kind of thinking about a name change to maybe go away from the Dojo Boys, because they're basically, as we obviously know, that with the cash cannons and with, you know, the fake money and all that stuff, it's obviously a little different from the typical name of the Dojo Boys. So it's interesting to know that they're thinking about the idea of changing the name and everything. So
are they going to have a bar mitzvah?
Maybe. I don't know. I forgot to ask him. I'll be honest, but yeah, it's always good to see, you know, the young up and comers, and on top of that, see how they're evolving, and especially like when you're following the beginning of their career and watching them grow and evolve and, you know, doing everything, and then you get to see, it's like, oh wow, like, man, I remember when you first started compared to now, it's two different people.
Yeah, it's a cool progression that you get to see, and you know, gonna be happy to continue.
You okay?
I don't know what I wanted to say. I'm going to be excited to see, you know, continue. you covered up pretty well.
Take three.
Did I really?
Yeah, no.
Going to be excited to continue seeing them progress. Obviously, we're going to see them on Friday at ACW, so that's
going
to be fun.
Hey, you did it.
Going to get to call them and call their matches. I'm done talking. Does somebody else want to talk? Seriously.
Yeah, sure.
I just had an AC Riley.
Yeah, I know. That was pretty bad, wasn't it? And he was sitting right here
the
whole time, and he made fun of you for pulling an AC Riley.
That's okay.
I think
for me, it's terrible when I do that, because I know that I'm doing it, so I think it's a little bit more enjoyable to see somebody else do that, because then I'm just like, I can relate, because it's like, oh, that's why they're making fun of me, because it really just looked bad on the other side.
At least you don't have to worry about me taking creepy pictures of you and posting them to Instagram on our road trip on Friday.
That's true, because we'll be driving separately.
Yep. So
yeah, you probably still have to follow us because you don't know how to get there. All right, cool, guys. This week on Tape Study, it's just we were talking promos when we first started the show, right?
Yes.
Let's look back at a collection of promos from Ric Flair, the master of the mic. Guys, there's something you can learn from any type of promo. Sit down and watch like 30 minutes worth of Ric Flair promos. I think there's actually a 30-minute promo that they actually put together on YouTube somewhere that we'll put up on the Facebookers and the Twitter machine and study for one of the greats.
You think that the Miz's promo was a great work shoot? Any promo by Ric Flair is exactly what that is, passion and the emotion in Ric Flair. Of course, his is a little bit more fabricated. But
I think, honest to God, we should almost retire the phrase work shoot.
Yes.
Because honestly, it was a fantastic promo.
Yeah,
that's what it was. When you're doing work shoot, I know everyone wants to look behind the curtain, break that fourth wall, but guys, a good promo is going to hook you no matter what. And I don't think relying on the fourth wall, sometimes it's not going to hook everyone, but raw emotion hooks people.
Right.
But we can agree that that's something that what made Ric Flair as good as he was the raw emotion. I mean, this guy sounded like
about his shoes.
And talking about his shoes.
These shoes cost
$500. He had raw emotion talking about his shoes, Jesse.
Yeah, he did.
And this guy
talking about his comeback from, you know, surviving a plane crash.
There's a reason why people think that he is the best. He's a promo god. Like, he's the best guy ever cutting promos, and there's a reason why that is, and you'll find out.
He's revered in the hip hop community.
He is. Killer
he
Mike.
He is.
Yep.
Yeah.
Killer
beyond
Mike.
Beyond that. Not even beyond Killer Mike. Almost everyone that grew up in the South loves Ric Flair.
Yeah, they always make Ric Flair references, but, you know, Ric Flair has a prominent role in Killer Mike's song. I don't know if he has a prominent role in other songs as well.
He's got a whole song named after him.
Is it really?
Yeah, called Ric Flair. That's
Which
the name
one?
Of the song. Ric Flair. That's the name of the song.
By who?
Killer Mike.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like,
yeah,
Killer
exactly.
Mike. That's what I'm saying. Go listen to Killer Mike.
He's got a whole song.
It's a good song. I put it on CD and I listen to it when I drive around sometimes, so go do that.
Yeah.
You know?
It's a great song.
Do you really?
I actually, I do.
He does.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's got a great hook.
Just ask.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good song. Do you listen to that song?
I think I have.
Yeah, you have to. If you mean we've.
Yeah, if you're not, you know, you're in charge of the music for the show. Why don't you just put it on this week?
You still got the Killer Mike CD? You still
of course.
Have it?
Yeah.
Bring it on the road.
I'll bring the Killer Mike.
Right,
I'll bring two of them. I got two of them.
You got two Killer Mike CDs.
Yeah.
Bring the Killer Mike
bring
CD.
Bring two of them. Why not?
I'll bring two of them. Yeah, why not?
Perfect. All right.
Sure.
Well, we got our road
trip. You
going to
bring any CDs too? Or you got any CDs?
No, probably not.
You sure?
I got Creed. You want that?
You got a bunch of
Can we listen to My Sacrifice for like 2 hours straight?
That's a CD that I bought. Yeah. First CD I ever bought was Creed, whatever CD that was. It was that
one.
Oh,
man.
Yeah,
My Sacrifice.
You guys going to grab Vic Ross with you for your trip, too?
Maybe.
Honestly, you could get Vic Ross and the rest of the Ross family on the road trip and just be like, hey, let's sing Creed all the way. And they would give you a better version than what the album is.
Woo! Guy looking like Larry Fitzgerald over here. And you sleep. That was the joke, yeah.
Yeah.
We talked football talk. Caught a piece of paper.
AC Riley, closing comments.
I got nothing today.
Cool.
Cool.
Is there something wrong with you?
No, like, I
do you have a fever?
Oh, I'm okay.
Alright.
I'm alright.
Are you sure?
Nick, closing comments.
There you all go, right. Man. I was trying to get you to say that. You know, I want to just send out a apology. Roadhouse, I'm sorry, dude. I didn't mean to call you nice. You're the biggest badass asshole I've ever met in my entire life. I hate you, and I hope we never cross paths again.
Yeah, backstory for that, because I don't think you understand what's going on.
No, you told me about it on the way back.
Oh, that's
you're
right.
Like, oh, I guess Nick has heat with Roadhouse, because Nick said Roadhouse was a nice guy. But
all right,
Roadhouse
so,
came up to me and
so,
said, no, he's
so
not a nice guy.
Backstory, then, for people that don't understand why Nick is doing this closing comment.
You're going to kill it. You're breaking the fourth wall here, bud.
Yeah.
Backstory is that Roadhouse is an asshole, and Nick had to acknowledge it.
There you go. Thank you. Thank you for that. So, Roadhouse, if you are still listening, screw off, dude. No, he's at, I have real heat with him. It sucks. I can't see. I either go too light or I go overboard. What am I going
to
do with myself?
We'll go to.
You know what? You are a medium.
You'll see him on ACW, and you'll find out if you cross the line or if you need to make another apology.
He
like,
will kill
hey,
me.
Seriously,
all right, it's not going to kill you.
You are a medium.
He might
guy.
French you.
A medium guy.
French.
Yeah. Remember when he's wearing dresses?
Like French
and kissing
or
people?
Like French.
Like the French Tickler, my friend? Or do you mean like a...
Rene Dupree?
Like Rene Dupree, like French Tickler?
Yes.
Yeah.
Ugh. What is Rene Dupree doing anyways? That guy, isn't he only like 25 years old still?
No. He's probably like 35
dude,
now.
When he was in WWE, he was like 19 years old.
Yeah, he's like 35
But that
now.
Was like 2004.
Oh, wow. It's been that long, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Time flies when you're getting
mean,
high.
You mean Rene Dupree was younger than me when he was in the WWF?
Yeah, I think he was.
So you're telling me Rene Dupree is still younger than me?
Yeah, then Rene Dupree would be
probably.
Younger than you.
Motherfucker.
Isn't that weird to think about?
Fuck.
It blows your mind a little bit, doesn't it?
Fuck. Yeah. What's even worse now is like guys who actually retired at 34 because they chose professional wrestling over a real job.
Well, you guys are talking about football, and you're talking about like, yeah, he's old, he's 30. Like, that's just
well,
that's a weird conversation piece.
Yeah.
Like, I understand that obviously, like, the relativity of age is a lot different in like combat sports and physical sports.
Yeah, it's like every single day you go to work, imagine like a 300-pound dude just crushing you for like two straight hours.
But it's
well,
always
some chicks would love that.
But it's weird. It's always weird to be like, oh, he's like really getting up there. He's like 65, and that's just in a normal setting. It's like, oh, he's really old. He's like 30.
You think that happens where like let's say like your job, you know, mass control, right? What's the retirement age for that?
I don't know. Whenever. Like, whenever you decide that
you're
so like, I don't
got,
want to do
we have guys that work there that are, like, 70 years old.
They got jeans, like...
They're not that old.
I mean,
they
pretty,
can still walk
pretty
around,
close, though.
They can still see things.
What is that?
They don't do
well,
that.
Well, it's like, for, like even for example, like, there were Jimmy Carter was in the news a couple days ago.
He's still
just,
is he still alive?
He's 94.
Wow.
And it's like, when you hear that, it's like, he's really old. He's 94. It's like, holy shit.
That guy was the president.
I remember he had cancer. Did he have, like, normal people cancer? Or like
I thought he had cancer, like,
cancer.
3 years ago. Like,
yeah.
3 years ago.
I
thought he was
yeah,
dead.
I think it was, like, something related to his health because they were talking that.
That's
got to
be pretty shitty. The only time you're in the news, it's like, oh, he's still alive.
That's pretty much it. It's the same thing.
I was the president, damn it.
Well,
I
the,
built
it was the
houses.
Same thing with,
I built houses.
With George Bush Sr. Like, the last time he was in the news
Johnny
recently
Cash
was
related to me.
When he's in the hospital.
Through marriage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, again, it's one of those things where it's like Jimmy Carter, 94, like, wow. And it's like, oh, this football player is 30. So, wow, he's really old.
That guy's old.
It's like literally like there's a 64-year gap on what's called old just based on the professions.
Yeah. Like I can't figure out if I want to draft Adrian Peterson because he's like 31. That's old in football years.
Is it Dynasty League or are you just using him this year?
Just this year. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. Safe bet, first round.
I mean, even pro wrestling, like New Japan was offering apprenticeships, and you basically the oldest you could be would be like 23.
The difference here about wrestling, if you want to talk about that, age is definitely changing a lot. I know we're trying to wrap this up, but obviously we're seeing guys like Ibushi, Nakamura, even Finn Balor, guys like that getting signed when they're in their mid-30s. So
but that
WWE's
was always
program has
the,
changed quite a bit.
Oh, what did they say? The rule of thumb back in the day was where your mental and your physical peak in wrestling is mid-30s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
so
they're signing these guys the developmental deals, though. They're not just signing them and throwing them up right away.
Yeah.
I just think age isn't as important as it was 15 years ago in wrestling.
Who are you calling Ole Yeller?
Oh.
Yeah. I guess that's it for Grapple Talk this week. Both Nick and Alex just went straight to the phone. So remember, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. If you have an Instagram, of course, we might have an Instagram account.
We do not. Nope.
Do we have a?
We have separate Instagram accounts, but not a Grapple Talk Instagram.
Okay. Well, what like kind of group stuff does Grapple Talk have besides Facebook
and
Twitter?
Just Facebook and Twitter, pretty much.
Okay, cool. Well, that's it then, folks.
We also have a group, iTunes and Podbean.
See what I did? Well, they can probably find us there as well.
I mean, I hope so.
Yeah.
All right, guys, let's wrap this one up. I got to go home and make some dinner. You're listening to Grapple Talk. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you Grapple Tall Holics next week.
He drunk already?
Next week.
Okay.
Grapple Tall Holics.
All right.
I like that. See ya. Right. Stay classy.
Geeks of the Industry presents Pro Wrestling Nation, hosted by Bay Area comedian Funky Sam Medina.
Hashtag killing.
Go check out Pro Wrestling Nation right now on iTunes, Stitcher, RedDragonsRadio.com, and of course, GeeksOfIndustry.com.
Hey, Dave, what do you get when an atheist and a Christian start a podcast?
I don't know, Ken. What do you get when a Christian and an atheist start a podcast?
I don't know. You're the frickin' comedian. I figured you'd have some kind of joke or something.
Right. Hi, I'm David Vox Mullen.
And I'm Mr. Anderson.
Seriously?
Wait for it. Just wait for it. Anderson.
And we're the hosts of Push the Button on the DVM Podcast Empire.
It's a show where we discuss religion, politics, and sex. All that stuff that we're not supposed to talk about.
I am a Christian.
And I'm an ordained minister with the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster.
I think that's code for he's an atheist.
And together, we tackle any and every hot button issue that the world is scared to talk about.
Yeah, we're not afraid of the truth.
Yeah, we're not afraid to piss people off.
We're not afraid to push the button.
So find us on iTunes.
Or simply visit us online at dvmpe.com. And God willing, you'll come back for more.
Yeah, God willing. You took the words right out of my mouth, Dave.
Thank you for tuning in to Grapple Talk.
All right, I'll start things.
Kind of squeaky.
Sounds like Lilo and Stitch. Hey, Lilo. Ohana.
Jesus.
Ohana means family. You don't even know what I'm talking about, Jesse?
I've never seen this movie.
Oh.
With Nick Ragnar, A.C. Riley, and Jesse Von Ruden.
Man, we just got some stuff for the blooper reel, that's what I'm saying.
Our entire podcast is the blooper reel.
Don't let the door hit you on the way out.